Practice Test 4. This is the Cambridge English B2 Business Vantage Listening Test 4. You will hear an introduction to each part of the test, and you will have time to look at the questions before you listen. You will hear each piece twice. While you are listening, you should write your answers on the question paper. There will now be a pause. Please ask any questions now, because you must not speak during the test. Now, open your question paper and look at part one. Part one, questions 1 to 12. You will hear three telephone conversations or messages. Write one or two words or a number in the numbered spaces on the notes or forms below. You will hear each recording twice. Recording 1. Questions 1 to 4. Look at the notes below. You will hear a man calling his office to get some information. You have 15 seconds to read through the notes. Now listen and fill in the spaces.
McAndrews and Associates, Sarah speaking.
Sarah, it's Daniel. I'm on the train to Edinburgh at the moment. I'm glad I caught you.
You're lucky. I was actually just on my way out the door.
Before you go, could you help me? I'm having a problem with my phone. The battery died and I can't seem to charge it no matter what I do. That wouldn't be a big problem except that all the information for my meeting is on there. I was hoping you could access my schedule.
Let me just log in. Okay. What did you need to know?
First, could you remind me of the name of the person I'm meeting today? It's something like Maloney?
That's close. It's actually Maroney. M-A-R-O-N-E-Y. Jane Maroney.
Okay, thanks. And where am I meeting her? I think it's on Victoria Street.
That's right. Her office is on the 15th floor. At 54 Victoria Street North.
Let me just make a note of that. Okay. And what time am I supposed to meet her? Is it at 2?
Actually, no. It looks like the original meeting was 2, but it got rescheduled for an hour earlier.
Really? Then I'd better hurry or I'll be late. Thanks, Sarah.
Now you will hear the recording again.
McAndrews and Associates, Sarah speaking.
Sarah, it's Daniel. I'm on the train to Edinburgh at the moment. I'm glad I caught you.
You're lucky. I was actually just on my way out the door.
Before you go, could you help me? I'm having a problem with my phone. The battery died and I can't seem to charge it no matter what I do. That wouldn't be a big problem except that all the information for my meeting is on there. I was hoping you could access my schedule.
Let me just log in. Okay. What did you need to know?
First, could you remind me of the name of the person I'm meeting today? It's something like Maloney?
That's close. It's actually Maroney. M-A-R-O-N-E-Y. Jane Maroney.
Okay, thanks. And where am I meeting her? I think it's on Victoria Street.
That's right. Her office is on the 15th floor at 54 Victoria Street North.
Let me just make a note of that. Okay. And what time am I supposed to meet her? Is it at 2?
Actually, no. It looks like the original meeting was 2, but it got rescheduled for an hour earlier.
Really? Then I'd better hurry or I'll be late. Thanks, Sarah.
Recording 2. Questions 5 to 8. Look at the notes below. You will hear a woman calling a company with a complaint. You have 15 seconds to read through the notes. Now listen and fill in the spaces.
Your call may be recorded for quality assurance purposes.
Customer service department, Nathan speaking. Can I get your order number, please?
Yes. It's 45-7233.
Thank you. And could you confirm your name, please?
Smith. Tina Smith.
Is Smith spelt the usual way?
No, it's spelt with a Y instead of an I in the middle.
Thank you. And how can I help you today, Tina?
I was sent the wrong item. Well, the wrong colour, I guess. I ordered baby blue, but I got sent a navy blue one.
I'm sorry about that. Let me fix it for you. Oh, actually, it looks as if the colour you want is unavailable and won't be in stock until Friday. Should I back order it for you?
Yes, please.
OK, I've done that. You should get it by early next week. To apologise for this mistake, I'm going to refund you the charge you paid for delivery. I'll also email you a discount voucher worth 10% off a future order. Is that OK?
Yes, that's great. Thank you.
My pleasure. Now, is there anything else I can help you with today?
No, everything's fine.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Customer service department, Nathan speaking. Can I get your order number, please?
Yes. It's 45-7233.
Thank you. And could you confirm your name, please?
Smith. Tina Smith.
Is Smith spelt the usual way?
No, it's spelt with a Y instead of an I in the middle.
Thank you. And how can I help you today, Tina?
I was sent the wrong item. Well, the wrong colour, I guess. I ordered baby blue, but I got sent a navy blue one.
I'm sorry about that. Let me fix it for you. Oh, actually, it looks as if the colour you want is unavailable and won't be in stock until Friday. Should I back order it for you?
Yes, please.
OK, I've done that. You should get it by early next week. To apologise for this mistake, I'm going to refund you the charge you paid for delivery. I'll also email you a discount voucher worth 10% off a future order. Is that OK?
Yes, that's great. Thank you.
My pleasure. Now, is there anything else I can help you with today?
No, everything's fine.
Recording 3. Questions 9 to 12. Look at the notes below. You will hear a man calling a company about a job application. You have 15 seconds to read through the notes. Now listen and fill in the spaces.
Stephanie Sheldon.
Hello. My name is Chidi Okonkwo. I applied for a job with you and got a message asking me to call you.
That's right. Thanks for calling back, Chidi. I just have a few questions for you, if that's okay. First, could you confirm that you graduated from University College London in 2012?
No. Well, I did graduate from UCL, but in 2013. Not 2012.
OK. And after graduation, you worked for Northern Technologies until 2015. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And my last question. Are you currently working as a consultant?
Yes, for Bright Industries. Sorry, Stephanie, I don't mean to be rude, but why are these questions part of the interview? Everything you're asking is on the CV I sent last Friday.
It's my turn to apologise, Chidi. We got your CV, but you faxed it, and we couldn't read some parts. I asked my assistant to explain that to you, but it sounds like he didn't.
The message just said to call about the job. I assumed it was a telephone interview.
No, we'll be holding interviews next week. I shouldn't really do this, but I can tell you right now that we're going to want to interview you in person, though, not over the phone. Does next Tuesday morning at 10 work?
I could do Wednesday at that time.
Perfect. I'll email to confirm.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Stephanie Sheldon.
Hello. My name is Chidi Okonkwo. I applied for a job with you and got a message asking me to call you.
That's right. Thanks for calling back, Chidi. I just have a few questions for you, if that's okay. First, could you confirm that you graduated from University College London in 2012?
No. Well, I did graduate from UCL, but in 2013, not 2012.
Okay. And after graduation, you worked for Northern Technologies until 2015, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And my last question, are you currently working as a consultant?
Yes, for Bright Industries. Sorry, Stephanie, I don't mean to be rude, but why are these questions part of the interview? Everything you're asking is on the CV I sent last Friday.
It's my turn to apologise, Chidi. We got your CV, but you faxed it, and we couldn't read some parts. I asked my assistant to explain that to you, but it sounds like he didn't.
The message just said to call about the job. I assumed it was a telephone interview.
No, we'll be holding interviews next week. I shouldn't really do this, but I can tell you right now that we're going to want to interview you in person, though, not over the phone. Does next Tuesday morning at 10 work?
I could do Wednesday at that time.
Perfect. I'll email to confirm.
That is the end of part one. You now have 20 seconds to check your answers. Part 2. Questions 13 to 22. Section 1. Questions 13 to 17. You will hear five short recordings. Five people are discussing their current work situation. For each recording, decide why each speaker changed jobs. Write one letter, A to H, next to the number of the recording. Do not use any letter more than once. You will hear the five recordings twice. You have 15 seconds to read the list A to H. Now listen and decide why each speaker changed jobs. Thirteen.
My partner got offered a job up north, and it was too good an opportunity to pass up. My former company offered to relocate me, but the nearest office would have been an hour away from our new home. I knew that if I commuted 2 hours each day, I'd have almost no time with the family, so I said no. It wasn't easy making a fresh start at a new company, to be honest. But I love my new job now, and our new home is a great place to raise kids.
14. I was working my way up the ladder at my last job, but it was a big company, and everything was slow and steady. I felt I was ready to take on new challenges, but there were at least three people with more seniority than me, so I decided to find a position at a smaller firm where I would have the responsibility I wanted. It almost didn't work out. I probably wasn't quite as ready as I thought I was, to be honest. But I learned on the job, and I'm glad I made the jump.
I love my old job. I still miss it, in fact. But the company hired a new manager about 2 years ago. She was very good at her job, but her way of working and my approach to the job just weren't a good fit. We liked each other personally, don't get me wrong. But it was obvious from fairly early on that I would have a hard time working for her. So I looked around for another position, and as luck would have it, a great opportunity fell into my lap.
My old boss hired me to oversee the market for children's products. That was where all my experience lay, and I was very good at my job. Over time, though, sales of those products steadily declined to the point where the company decided to focus on products for teenagers and adults. I knew I'd be leaving money on the table if I went somewhere else, but I really wanted to keep working on the children's side of things. So I came over to a smaller competitor.
I read an article in a business magazine about how my former industry was going to die within a few years. I thought the article was wrong about the time frame, but right that the industry had a limited amount of time left. After I left, I was out of work for longer than I expected, which was stressful. But I eventually got a job in a new field, and it's going very well. And my old industry, it's not quite dead yet, but it's a fraction of the size it used to be.
Now you will hear the five recordings again.
My partner got offered a job up north, and it was too good an opportunity to pass up. My former company offered to relocate me, but the nearest office would have been an hour away from our new home. I knew that if I commuted 2 hours each day, I'd have almost no time with the family, so I said no. It wasn't easy making a fresh start at a new company, to be honest, but I love my new job now, and our new home is a great place to raise kids.
I was working my way up the ladder at my last job, but it was a big company, and everything was slow and steady. I felt I was ready to take on new challenges, but there were at least three people with more seniority than me, so I decided to find a position at a smaller firm where I would have the responsibility I wanted. It almost didn't work out. I probably wasn't quite as ready as I thought I was, to be honest. But I learned on the job, and I'm glad I made the jump.
I love my old job. I still miss it, in fact. But the company hired a new manager about 2 years ago. She was very good at her job, but her way of working and my approach to the job just weren't a good fit. We liked each other personally, don't get me wrong. But it was obvious from fairly early on that I would have a hard time working for her. So I looked around for another position, and as luck would have it, a great opportunity fell into my lap.
My old boss hired me to oversee the market for children's products. That was where all my experience lay, and I was very good at my job. Over time, though, sales of those products steadily declined to the point where the company decided to focus on products for teenagers and adults. I knew I'd be leaving money on the table if I went somewhere else, but I really wanted to keep working on the children's side of things. so I came over to a smaller competitor.
XVII.
I read an article in a business magazine about how my former industry was going to die within a few years. I thought the article was wrong about the time frame, but right that the industry had a limited amount of time left. After I left, I was out of work for longer than I expected, which was stressful. But I eventually got a job in a new field, and it's going very well. And my old industry, it's not quite dead yet, but it's a fraction of the size it used to be.
Section 2. Questions 18 to 22. You will hear another 5 recordings. 5 people are talking about their strategies for hiring the best employees. For each recording, decide what hiring strategy each person uses. Write one letter, A to H, next to the number of the recording. Do not use any letter more than once. You will hear the 5 recordings twice. You have 15 seconds to read the list A to H. Now listen and decide what hiring strategy each person uses.
Over the years, I've learned it can be helpful to watch what the interviewee does more than listen to his or her words. I know that sounds a bit strange. Body language often gives me useful clues to how well a candidate will be able to do the job. The other day, for example, I interviewed this great candidate. I asked him about public speaking, which would have been a big part of his job if we hired him. He said he loves giving presentations, but his body language showed the opposite. So I hired somebody else.
XIX.
I look at people's CVs, of course, but a lot of people want to work here, so pretty much everyone has a great CV. You know, they all went to a good college, they all have great experience, and so on. So, in addition to looking at their background, I focus on what that person would be like in a social setting. I imagine going out for a coffee or a meal. If I think the candidate would be an interesting person to hang out with, he or she has a much better chance of getting hired.
The CV is important. Any obvious mistakes and they're out. But I probably spend no more than 20 seconds per CV. Why? I save my time to look at a person's online presence. I'll Google the person, check them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and a few other sites. Doing this really helps me learn who that person is. Everybody's made a few mistakes in the past, so I'm not expecting to find people who are perfect. But reviewing social media posts has helped me avoid more than a few hiring mistakes, I can tell you.
At this company, we want people who are creative and think outside the box. I like to start the interview off in the usual way, with questions about a candidate's background and experience. About halfway through, though, I ask a strange question to see how the candidate responds. One of my favourites is, how can you make friends with a fish? There's no right answer, of course, but candidates who can't or won't even try to respond are usually not a good fit. But those who come up with something often have the spark we're looking for.
I always ask people to arrive 30 minutes early for the interview. Then I have a couple of junior people on my team interact with the candidates while they're waiting. The candidates relax in front of these team members and show what they're really like. I give them a proper interview as well, of course. But if a candidate aces the official interview, but my junior team members didn't like him or her, then I'll go with somebody who did less well in the interview, but who got the approval of my team.
Now you will hear the five recordings again.
Over the years, I've learned it can be helpful to watch what the interviewee does more than listen to his or her words. I know that sounds a bit strange. Body language often gives me useful clues to how well a candidate will be able to do the job. The other day, for example, I interviewed this great candidate. I asked him about public speaking, which would have been a big part of his job if we hired him. He said he loves giving presentations, but his body language showed the opposite. So I hired somebody else.
I look at people's CVs, of course, but a lot of people want to work here, so pretty much everyone has a great CV. You know, they all went to a good college, they all have great experience, and so on. So, in addition to looking at their background, I focus on what that person would be like in a social setting. I'll imagine going out for a coffee or a meal. If I think the candidate would be an interesting person to hang out with, he or she has a much better chance of getting hired.
The CV is important. Any obvious mistakes and they're out. But I probably spend no more than 20 seconds per CV. Why? I save my time to look at a person's online presence. I'll Google the person, check them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and a few other sites. Doing this really helps me learn who that person is. Everybody's made a few mistakes in the past, so I'm not expecting to find people who are perfect. But reviewing social media posts has helped me avoid more than a few hiring mistakes, I can tell you.
At this company, we want people who are creative and think outside the box. I like to start the interview off in the usual way with questions about a candidate's background and experience. About halfway through, though, I ask a strange question to see how the candidate responds. One of my favourites is, how can you make friends with a fish? There's no right answer, of course. But candidates who can't or won't even try to respond are usually not a good fit. But those who come up with something often have the spark we're looking for.
I always ask people to arrive 30 minutes early for the interview. Then I have a couple of junior people on my team interact with the candidates while they're waiting. The candidates relax in front of these team members and show what they're really like. I give them a proper interview as well, of course. But if a candidate aces the official interview, but my junior team members didn't like him or her, then I'll go with somebody who did less well in the interview, but who got the approval of my team.
2 3. 23-30. You will hear a man talk about a woman, Nessa Robertson, who is receiving an award. For each question 23 to 30, mark one letter, A, B or C, for the correct answer. You will hear the recording twice. You have 45 seconds to read through the questions. Now listen and mark A, B or C.
As head of the Cruise Industry Association of Canada, one of the highlights of my position is presenting a Lifetime Achievement Award to one of our members. This year, I am especially honored because the person receiving the award is somebody who mentored me early in my career. I owe a lot to her, as do many of you, I'm sure. She's one of the industry's leading experts and influencers. And I'm sure her name is familiar to you all. Nessa Robertson. It's hard to believe, but Nessa began her career in the travel industry 40 years ago, shortly after she arrived in Canada from the United Kingdom, where she was born. Initially, she focused on travel in general, rather than cruising in particular. But that changed in the 1980s when she started working for Atlas Cruises. By the early 1990s, Nessa had used her charm and intelligence to become a major player in the industry. Many people would have been satisfied with that, but not Nessa. In 1991, she took a calculated risk and was one of the founding partners of a company called Mata Mata Cruises. The company enjoyed almost instant success, and under Nessa's leadership, it went on to become the most profitable and respected specialist cruise operator in the country. Again, most people would probably have been satisfied, but Nessa remained eager for new challenges. In 2015, she sold Mata Mata and launched not one, but two new ventures. She started a cruise company that focuses on promoting niche market luxury cruises. She also began publishing a magazine called Cruise Lifestyles. If you've ever had a chance to read this magazine, you'll know that it's a fascinating mix of profiles of typical cruise destinations, articles about safety and technology, and advice for everyone, from those new to cruising to old hands. This new publishing venture has also been a success. And as a result, Nessa is involved in the publication of three other travel magazines in North America. In addition to everything I've already mentioned, Nessa finds the time to appear in several series of videos. One series involves in-depth interviews with executives from cruise lines. Another series is intended for an audience of global travelers who want to get the most from their cruising experiences. Nessa also, somehow, finds the time to write regular columns for cruise and travel-related websites, speak at industry events, and act as a mentor to up-and-coming people in the industry. From my point of view, one of the most remarkable things about Nessa Robertson is that despite her many years in this industry, she has never lost her passion for cruising. She is one of the very few people at the top of this industry who takes cruises as often as she can and looks forward to each and every one. I was speaking to Nessa earlier this week, and she was excitedly telling me about her next cruise, which will be the 200th of her career. As a result of taking all those cruises, Nessa has been lucky enough to visit 94 of the world's nations. She told me that she'll consider retiring once she's visited 100. But only consider it, mind you. Anyway, enough for me. Sadly, Nessa cannot be here tonight to accept this award in person, but she has recorded a short video message, which we will now watch.
Now you will hear the recording again.
As head of the Cruise Industry Association of Canada, one of the highlights of my position is presenting a Lifetime Achievement Award to one of our members. This year, I am especially honored because the person receiving the award is somebody who mentored me early in my career. I owe a lot to her, as do many of you, I'm sure. She's one of the industry's leading experts and influencers. And I'm sure her name is familiar to you all. Nessa Robertson. It's hard to believe, but Nessa began her career in the travel industry 40 years ago, shortly after she arrived in Canada from the United Kingdom, where she was born. Initially, she focused on travel in general, rather than cruising in particular. But that changed in the 1980s when she started working for Atlas Cruises. By the early 1990s, Nessa had used her charm and intelligence to become a major player in the industry. Many people would have been satisfied with that, but not Nessa. In 1991, she took a calculated risk and was one of the founding partners of a company called Matamata Cruises. The company enjoyed almost instant success, and under Nessa's leadership, it went on to become the most profitable and respected specialist cruise operator in the country. Again, most people would probably have been satisfied, but Nessa remained eager for new challenges. In 2015, she sold Matamata and launched not one, but two new ventures. She started a cruise company that focuses on promoting niche market luxury cruises. She also began publishing a magazine called Cruise Lifestyles. If you've ever had a chance to read this magazine, you'll know that it's a fascinating mix of profiles of typical cruise destinations, articles about safety and technology, and advice for everyone, from those new to cruising to old hands. This new publishing venture has also been a success. And as a result, Nessa is involved in the publication of three other travel magazines in North America. In addition to everything I've already mentioned, Nessa finds the time to appear in several series of videos. One series involves in-depth interviews with executives from cruise lines. Another series is intended for an audience of global travelers who want to get the most from their cruising experiences. Nessa also, somehow, finds the time to write regular columns for cruise and travel-related websites, speak at industry events, and act as a mentor to up-and-coming people in the industry. From my point of view, one of the most remarkable things about Nessa Robertson is that despite her many years in this industry, she has never lost her passion for cruising. She is one of the very few people at the top of this industry who takes cruises as often as she can and looks forward to each and every one. I was speaking to Nessa earlier this week, and she was excitedly telling me about her next cruise, which will be the 200th of her career. As a result of taking all those cruises, Nessa has been lucky enough to visit 94 of the world's nations. She told me that she'll consider retiring once she's visited 100, but only consider it, mind you. Anyway, enough for me. Sadly, Nessa cannot be here tonight to accept this award in person, but she has recorded a short video message, which we will now watch.
That is the end of Test 4.